Joining us now, he's out there with you guys, PGA Tour player, European Tour player, Robert Carlson, local Charlotte resident. Welcome on, Robert.
Thank you very much.
I want to ask you right out of the gate, though. You recently hosted an event on the European Challenge Tour, finished tied for 17th. You can't win your own event, can you?
Well, you tell you one thing. You're trying your best, but it is just hard. I had it going, and I was actually I played really well for about 2.5 rounds, but I wasn't really able to maintain it the whole weekend. But if you're hosting an event, there's a lot of things going on. I mean, it was dinners every night. There was clinics and looking after juniors and making sure all the players had a good week. So I'm very proud of the event and to be a part of it. But it's not the easiest to play that week.
Well, I mean, so before we turn our attention to this event, let's talk a little bit about how your game is right now, because you're getting ready to take off. I mean, our listeners may not know, you have 11 European Tour wins, 2 Ryder Cup appearances, you're the 2008 Order of Merit winner, and the last one that was called that, right? Because they changed it to whatever it became after that. Yeah, I like Order of Merit. It just sounds cool.
Yeah.
It sounds very cool.
Yeah.
How's your game right now? And tell us a little bit about these plans you have to go travel.
Yeah, I mean, I've been struggling with my game over the last few years, but it feels pretty good. I'm working hard with my coach, Pete Cowan, and I saw him a few hours last night because he's been here, obviously, in Charlotte for the guys playing at the USPGA, so he was nice enough to come out and see me a few hours. So the game feels good. It's just at the moment to transfer it to threes and fours and not to fives and sixes and sevens.
So where did it what happened? I mean, I'm always curious because it happens in other stick and ball sports that you just kind of lose your way and then you got to find it back. What happens to get off track, and then how do you stay focused to get back on track?
Well, first of all, what happens to get off track? That's very easy. Golf is a hard game, and I played really, really well. I was out for an injury for almost half a year. I got an eye condition that stopped me from playing for 4 months. I came back and I played well, but I never really found my form. I won a couple of events after, but I still sort of suffered a bit with it, and I never really got going. And then I struggled. I don't like call the name Yips, but it's
right.
People knows what it is. But for me, it definitely, I struggled to start my backswing, and when you're going through a thing like that for a couple of months, it is not much fun to play.
Right.
You kind of have to restart again.
Yeah, I mean, is it like fear of the result, or is it the swing itself might not be what you need?
Well, for me, it was more, I started to take bad decisions before I hit the shot. I didn't really like the way I was playing. So I stand there over the ball, and I don't take the decision before the ball. Before I step up to the ball. So I'm not clear enough in my mind what I'm doing. So all of a sudden I take the decision over the ball, and the routine becomes just a little bit longer, and just a little bit longer, and just a little bit longer.
Then you realize it's longer.
And you hear from other people, you better start going here now. And one thing leads to another.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden it's like, what am I doing here?
Right.
Yeah. And I didn't think it was fun to practice, and one thing led to another.
Right. But the skill set's still there.
Yeah, it's there.
So, you know, recapturing that, it's just a process.
Yeah, it is. And I've been hitting the ball really well, and I've been playing nicely. It's just that when I had to go through that and kind of reboot again,
you
so much focus on the long game.
Mm.
So then you lose the short game. So even if you hit it nicely, you come back and you chip and putt like not so good.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, it doesn't matter how you hit it. So then one thing leads to another again.
Well, we're here at the PGA Championship, the 99th, with Robert Carlson right here in the studio with us at the course. I'm curious, you live in Charlotte now. You actually have two sort of half homes now in Charlotte. Do you feel any sense of pride in this sort of being a semi-hometown event for you?
It is. This was definitely one of my the goals for the year, to try to get in here. I didn't, but at least I got to the radio booth.
Well, this is big time. So,
you
know, the best is barely good enough here at the Golf Shop Show. Mark, what you got?
Well, you know, I was kind of going to say, I hope it wasn't the fact that Robert and I played in the Pro-Am for the Chiquita Classic several years ago. So I hope that had nothing to do with his losing focus on his game. But, Robert, with the changes to this golf course, and I know you've played this golf course in the past, and I'm not sure if you've played it with the current changes. I mean,
yeah, I
what
have.
Are you seeing out of this golf course? Does it have a different set of teeth now than it had before?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Definitely. I played it probably four or five times since it's been redone, and the firmness of the greens is completely different. And even though the holes are looking very similar, most of them, it is much, much harder to get the ball close to the hole. And always what you have with new greens, you have small, subtle breaks in them, and they're just, in general, quite hard to read. If you see guys like Jordan Spieth and other guys who make a good living out of putting well, missing a lot of putts, it shows that it's hard to read the greens. And at this speed as well, they just become so much harder to read because all the breaks are, they get more. So, yeah, it's definitely a harder golf course now than it was before.
Well, and we're hearing, coming out of the first 2 days, that the rough is unpredictable. What does that mean, if the rough is unpredictable?
Yeah, well, when you play on rough that is overseeded rough in general, like you can have it at Augusta, it's not very thick, but the ball sits up a little bit, and you can see on the lie the ball is going to come out very dead, or it will fly. Here you look down in the ball and you have absolutely no idea how it's going to come out. It might come out hot and fly with very little spin, or it might come out heavy.
So what goes into the decision in trying to predict that? Swing? Luck?
I talked to Pete Cowell, my coach, again yesterday, and he said, if you don't grip down on the club and try to hit a low fade, you have no idea where the ball is going. That's the only choice you have.
So we need to look for that this weekend.
Yeah, let's see if someone is using it. That was his point of view. I haven't been around the course, but he has been walking a bit with Henrik. He's been walking with some of the other players, and he said all the guys that are trying to hit a so-called normal shot, they're playing with fire because they can come out anyway.
I think that's a good point, because those of us who are familiar with playing in Bermuda rough or Bermuda grass around this area of the country or anywhere south of here, you've got to be a little steeper on the golf ball coming into it, because if you're shallow, and I don't want to get too technical here, but if you're shallow and you're coming into the golf ball at a little more shallow angle, there's far more unpredictability as far as how much grass is going to get between the face of the golf club and the ball. And then it can come out, it's almost like a mud ball, comes out with no spin, it's all over the place. And holding these greens with no spin, Robert was explaining to us, number four is hard to hold with spin.
With spin, right.
Yeah. You know, hitting an 8-iron as high as he can and still running it through the green a few months back here. So with no spin, completely unpredictable.
Yeah, it's really, really hard. And then, as I said, I mean, they're really firm. It's a lot of more rough around the greens. So it becomes one thing leads to another. And we're sitting here just facing the big the board here, and it's plenty of bogeys on this board. There's also quite a few birdies, but when you get it just a little bit wrong, it's so many bogeys.
You know, it's interesting. Like Greeny and I watched Phil. We walked with Phil a little bit, and as we know, Phil didn't have his best outing. Phil is great at escapability.
Yeah.
But when you take his ability to spin the golf ball out of play with this rough, especially around the greens when he's missing fairways and greens and trying to get up and down with flop shots, the short-sided pins, and he can't spin it, he's got 15, 20 feet coming back for par. And that's what I saw happen to him over the last couple of days. And Jordan, same thing yesterday. Didn't hit a ton of greens, missed a bunch of fairways. Tough to create the magic when you can't create the spin.
So what can our listeners learn from that? If you're facing thick Bermuda rough,
hit more fairways.
Hit more fairways.
Hit more fairways. That was my idea.
Hit more fairways. I was listening to Zach Johnson talk about it, and he said, my game plan is real simple. You know, it's even on this golf course, as long as it is, maybe dial it back, hit more fairways. It's a completely different ball game, even if you're coming in from 225, 230 with an iron out of the fairway versus you're down the hole 30, 40, 50 yards further trying to squeeze cut one out of 2.5 inches of Bermuda rough that's completely unpredictable. So I think that's the biggest game plan, is try and get the ball in the fairway even if they're giving up a few yards.
Yeah, you can see also on the leaderboard, I don't know exactly how Kevin Kisner plays it, but the guys who are playing are up at the top of the leaderboard, they will be hitting more fairways than most of them. Look at Paul Casey, he's a great ball striker. Ben Ahn is a great ball striker. Fowler, Justhausen, Molinari hits a very straight. Jason Day, if he's on, is a world-class player. I mean, it's all guys who are at the moment playing the hit in the fairways.
Well, you were once nicknamed the scientist. I'm sure there are people who still call you the scientist. Who on that leaderboard that you know well enough to speak to is also that kind of an analytical player?
Molinari.
Molinari, really?
Yeah.
Just a very thoughtful player around the course? Or?
Yeah, and he's got that kind of game as well. I mean, he knows what he's doing. He's trying to figure out a good way of attacking whatever he has in front of him. And a very, very solid, solid person and player.
And able to overcome what is seen by most as a lack of length. I mean, he's not in the top 100 in driving. I mean, he's 5'8", 150 pounds. Yeah.
And around this course, you think the guys who hit it a bit shorter is going to struggle.
Right.
But it's actually very often the opposite. On long courses, you see the shorter guys doing very well. And on short courses, you see the really, really long guys doing well. And and the reason for that, because it doesn't sound like it makes sense, but if a long hitter hits a 5 or 6 iron into the green, he's not making any birdies.
Right.
And if a short hitter hits a 3 iron or a hybrid into the green, he's not making any birdies anyway. So all of a sudden, it's level terms. But on the short course, if the long guys gets 50 yards in or 100 yards in, well, the shorter guy stands with an 8 iron. They can't compete.
Yeah.
So it's
that's
the
interesting.
Opposite.
That
it's,
makes a lot of
like
sense.
Like the game manager
absolutely
has a place on a course like this.
And mentally, a guy who hits it, you know, 285 to 290 versus guys that are hitting it 320 plus come into this golf course saying it's 7,600 yards long. I got to hit fairways and hit greens. And they're thinking more even par, they're thinking more pars. They're not challenging the golf course as much as maybe the long guys are doing and bringing those big numbers into play.
Yeah, yeah.
Mark, what you got?
Robert, when you start talking about this golf course, and we all know, we've seen the changes, we know that the first five holes have kind of been eating people's lunch a little bit, and we all know about the green mile. What's kind of a hole in the middle of the round that you would focus at and say, okay, this is a hole that I'm just looking at making a par on and getting out of here and going to the next hole.
Number 9 is a strong par 4, or I would think when I've played it now, that when I played it anyway, I experienced number 11 to be hard. And it's gone from being a kind of a driver, almost a wedge hole, to driver in some sort of mid-iron at least. And the green is difficult. The back of the green slopes away. So when I played here a couple of months ago, it was super hard to hit the green. I don't know exactly what the numbers are, but that would probably be holes I'd look at.
With holes that got, I mean, this generation of golfer, everybody either is hitting a fade or hitting a draw. Do they have trouble with a really straight hole with a narrow fairway? Because you can't really shape it?
Some people do.
Yeah.
Some definitely. I know one guy who's totally the opposite. And I mean, Henrik, he's always struggled around here because this course sets very much up for a bit of a drawer.
Uh-huh.
So Henrik has definitely had problems here. Never broken 70 around this golf course. And he's played here about 4 events, I think.
Wow.
It's the first time he ever breaks a cut around here. Yeah.
I didn't know that.
He was strongly considering to not even turn up. This is I might as well not go because I've been playing 2 days. I might as well be at home with my kids. But he could be with
you in one of your half homes having pea soup and herring. I mean, you know, feel right at home.
That's really interesting. And since you mentioned Henrik and you had mentioned some of your past swing struggles, which we hope are in the rearview mirror forever now, he struggled with a similar thing, did he not? He had issues with the driver for years. I mean, we know he hits the strong three wood now most of the time. I've seen him hit more drivers recently, but did you have any conversations with Henrik to try and get, you know, psyche-wise, how he was able to bounce back from that and be as successful as he's been since those struggles he had?
Yeah, I had actually had dinner with him Scottish Open last year, and I actually just asked him about that. How did you? Because I mean, he was probably number 10. He was top 10 in the world, and then went back to probably 250 or 300 in the world, and now he's back to the top of the game, and that's extremely strong-minded person who's doing that to just come back to that extent. But his point of view was, I was so far off from where I was, how I was playing, and what my expectation level was. He said, well, I want to be top 10 in the world again, when he was number 250. Well, it's like, his mental guy, Torsten, Swedish guy he works with, is like, why don't we just let's try to get to 240 first, or to 200? And that changed his frame of mind. So instead of going out not playing very well, trying to hit the perfect shots, he sort of went everything, took it back a step or two, and then just let's figure out how to make a par on this hole. It doesn't matter if I have 5 iron off the tee. Let's make it 5 or a par, and then kind of build from there.
Makes sense. Makes complete sense.
Well, Robert, we really appreciate you coming on with us, and good luck to you in the upcoming event that you're going to be playing in, and we hope to see you back at the Wells Fargo next year.
Thank you. I'll go do my best.